the shelf next to Mars and Nestle and all the big billion euro companies, they're not going to take it lightly when they see these new kind of upshoots coming in with this new product. It's like a silent war field going into stores.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. We're doing something a little bit different this week. We're launching a new segment called the Rising Stars segment. And what that is essentially is that I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I'm picking one or two young Irish companies every season that I think are going to be a massive success. It's as simple as that. We're starting with a great company who I'm a massive fan of. We're starting with All Real Nutrition. You'll have spotted their protein bars popping up all around the country. They're having an explosive year. This is my chat with their co-founder, Niall Harty. First off, I want to say a quick thank you to my partners for season 7. They've been incredible people to work with. First up, we have Chapter.ie. They're a creative studio based out of Cork. They're a team of strategists, designers, communicators. Essentially, they will do everything to do with your brand and your creative side of the business. So they will do your comm strategy, visual identity, digital and social strategy, right up to your interiors and your events. They're your one-stop shop when you're thinking about the creative side of your business. Go to chapter.ie and check them out. Next, we have Bay Street Innovation. And what they do is, think of them as your technical partner. If you're a non-technical founder, which I am and was, then you need someone to help out on the technical side of the business. They will help you with things like your MVP generation. They'll help you build out something to MVP status and then get it ready to launch. Or they'll help you if you have existing businesses that you want to streamline and make more efficient. They'll help you automate things that are quite repetitive and quite strenuous on your business. They'll help you build up an automated system for that. Or they'll help you on the web development side of things if you're looking to do like a major product on the web. Check out baystreet.io for those guys. And next up, we have Find a Venue and Zoom Party. Sean and his team will help you do a online event. So if you want to do something through Zoom for your remote team, or if you don't want to get your team together in a physical location, they'll help you do that. Or if you want to do a hybrid event whereby you want to have a physical event, they'll help you sort that out as well. Go to findavenue.ie or zoomparty.ie and Sean and his team will get you going. Now, straight into my chat with Niall Harty, the co-founder of All Real Nutrition. Niall, welcome to the pod.
Hey Gary, thanks for having me.
I'm enjoying the All Real Nutrition branding on the jumper.
Oh yeah, available at eatallreal.com. Get the plug in early.
Thanks for joining me. How are you? You're on the mend.
Yeah, recovered from COVID now. So thankfully didn't get it too bad. Just a bit of a head cold. But like I said, it seems to be doing the rounds at the moment. So I'm kind of glad to get it out of the way so yeah. I can focus and get back to what we're doing.
Well, after the year you've had, understandably, you might be a little bit run down. You've had a crazy 12 months.
It's definitely been a bit of a rocket ship, and probably the last 6 months more than the first 6 months, but we're building a lot of foundations. But yeah, really, really good year. As good as we could have planned, really.
It's, in a pandemic, it's great to be able to say that, but this is kind of one of those 12-month, 5-6 year overnight successes. So bring me back before All Real. Bring me back to the very start.
Okay, yeah, well, you're 100% right. You know, we didn't just start zero 12 months ago. Myself and Ross were the two co-founders of All Real, and we both kind of came together from previous brands. So I launched a natural protein bar brand called Origin Protein Bars, I think in March of 2017. And when I say I was a one-man band, I definitely mean I was a one-man band. Raised some money from the local enterprise office and AIB, gave us a bit of a loan. Got together some equipment, quite literally was up the crack of dawn making protein bars, filling the car, driving around to every shop and cafe around Kerry who would be interested in selling our products, and then in the evening doing invoices and social media and that kind of thing. And did that for about 2 months, and then I decided it was probably time to hire somebody to help me make the bars. And at that point, I realized I was actually rubbish at making the bars and making them really slow. So I got a good guy in who could make like 6 times more than me in the same amount of time. So that was a bit of a learning curve. But yeah, we just kind of built it up store by store. Got a couple of different strings to the business. So like we got approached by the VHI Women's Mini Marathon. They wanted like 20,000 bars for that. And I was like, how many? I can make like 100. So we kind of just went you know, all out to get that kind of order ready. And we had two students who were doing work placements at the time. They were doing computer studies. They were in packing bars with us, and every aunt, uncle, cousin inside packing bars to get this order out. And yeah, but we made it. And what we kind of learned from that was, oh God, there might be a market doing kind of making bars for other people. You know, starting your own brand is quite hard. So it's kind of in a transition point, going like, will I go one way or the other? Maybe I'll open up both channels and see what works. So open up a website anyway for contract manufacturing is what we call it. And got a couple, actually spent quite a lot of time. There's a lot of people interested, but I found it's like a lot of, say, time wasters or people who didn't really have intent to go on through. But then I got contacted by one guy who had a fairly successful Biltong brand that was selling all over Ireland, UK, Germany, and so on. And he wanted to create another product for his brand. Started talking to him a bit. Really nice guy. And then he kind of said, look, I'm actually leaving my current brand. You know, the investors are taking on my share. So I'm going alone. So I want to continue making this bar. And I said, okay, that's fine. And I didn't hear from him for a couple of weeks. As we were growing, I was talking to my DA in Enterprise Ireland, saying, look, the business side is kind of growing for me, but I actually need some help in the sales. Like, I can make the bars and I can market them, but it's actually the technical side of sales and retail. I was felt very, you know, I suppose, underskilled in that area.
What stage were you at then? You were kind of doing everything yourself still. You were selling into shops and cafes and a bit of this and a bit of that.
Yeah. And we're in the Food Academy with Super Value. It's about 6 months in at this stage. Okay. It's like, look, from day one, I had a global ambition of building a brand up, you know, not just locally in Ireland, but, you know, we wanted to go big from the jump, but we had to convince people. And, you know, I didn't have a background in the food industry or, you know, a lot of connections. So it was one of these things where you literally had to build it step by step, bar by bar, for lack of a better term.
Why protein bars, actually?
It's funny, I started making health snacks, natural health snacks. I could see a growth in natural health foods, and a lot of them tasted rubbish, and I knew I could make something better. And I had just finished college. I was doing engineering. By the time I got my degree, I realized I hated engineering. So I went back, actually worked in the student union for a year or two, kind of really liked the business side of that and was like, right, I want to get into business. And food was something I had a passion in, and went back into postgrad in food science, nutrition, health, and UCD. So I got a bit more of a technical understanding of food and so on. So just started developing products in my kitchen, really. Developed two or three brands, got them to farmers market stage, one or two stores. Didn't work out for whatever reasons. And, you know, I was kind of just whittling away in the background, trying to create something, and eventually kind of got on to creating kind of snack balls with adding protein and all this kind of thing. And I was like, you know, they're so hard to make. Bars just won't really work. And I could see the growth of the natural protein bars in America. I was like, there's actually nothing like those products here, and they're doing so well. It's like, why don't I do it? Like, no one else is doing it. So just started developing products, trying to find recipe or ingredients from local suppliers, developing the recipes, and just built it up. Like, it's one of those things, like, how do you start? You just start and you figure it out day by day.
That's always the question though, right? Because people are like, oh, he must have the secret sauce. That's always the secret. It's doing stuff.
Yeah, well, the secret is 3 years of not knowing what the hell you're doing before you actually launch it.
But doing something, that's the secret, doing something.
Yeah. Because what'll happen is you'll get somewhere kind of close where you want, and next thing something will just click and you go, I never thought of that. Okay, boom. And then you're on to the next thing, the next thing.
Yeah.
Before you know it, 3 years pass and you still don't have a business, but you're about to launch one, you know? It just takes bit by bit. But yeah, I saw like a couple of these American companies and, you know, looking at the back of the ingredients and, you know, what I could get here, and eventually developed something. And that's when we launched Origin, got it to that point. And it was growing to a point where I was like, okay, I need someone who actually knows what they're doing. I'm getting a bit lost. The Food Academy is great. It does kind of help you. But when you start getting to central listings and a lot of the other stuff in Irish retail, you know, they'll kind of chew you up and spit you out kind of thing. You need to know.
Nice pun there, Niall. Nice pun.
Yeah. So anyway, I knew I needed to bring on a co-founder, and I was thinking, my God, Ross is just after leaving his business. He's really good at sales. He's built up a thing all around. I have a really good product and I know how to make them. Thinking, I was driving home from work and I remember just having that moment and, all right, I need to email that guy as soon as I get home. And as soon as I got home, and no word of a lie, there was an email in my inbox just waiting me from Ross saying, Niall, look, I love what you're doing. We're both trying to make bars. Think we should come together, maybe do a joint venture or something like that. So picked up the phone to him. We're on the phone for about 3 hours, I'd say. I must have done 300 laps in my sitting room. We were so excited because he had the missing part of the puzzle that I needed and vice versa. And, you know, we both had opposing skill sets, opposing temperaments, opposing everything. And it just really, really worked. So what I said to him is like, right, from Monday, you'll be 50% owner in this company, whether you will or not on paper, but you'll be treated like that. Mm. We'll work together for 6 months. And if we're still happy after 6 months, we'll start talking about shareholders agreements and all this kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but I said, if this was ever going to work and he was going to come on, he had to be 50% from day one or it wouldn't work because there'd be, you know, there'd be a different balance in the relationship and so on. And I did get criticized in my close circles going, why are you doing this? You're going to give away half your business. Mm. And it goes back to the old adage, you know, like, you know, a slice of a watermelon is better than a whole grape, you know? And it's like, yeah. So look, I'd much rather bring someone else on board the journey. So we're on a kind of a food development program, a food works at Bord Bia. And for any budding food entrepreneur in the alcohol space or in food, health food, any type of food business who's looking to scale beyond Ireland, that is a go-to accelerator program. It's run by Bord Bia Enterprise Ireland and Chagask, so they can help from the business side, the marketing side, and from the product development side. Very, very good program. A lot of the key Irish brands you'll see have gone through that.
I'll put that in the show notes. So that's called Foodworks.
Foodworks, yeah. Right. Highly recommend it. So throughout that, so Ross had come on board at that time. You know, he hasn't official in, but, you know, we were treating him like he was. And after I worked with Ross for about a month, we both knew, look, you know, this is going to work. Yeah. You know, we both get on really well. You know, we don't really have arguments, you know, maybe kind of slightly heated discussions. But, you know.
Was it hard transitioning from a solo founder to a partnership?
Yes and no. I knew it was what I had to do, so right. I just got on with it. It was quite hard to just leave the ego behind and just go, right, yeah, I've done everything to this point. That's only gotten me to here.
Okay.
If I had someone else with me, we probably would have been a lot further by now. So I just need to understand that and just had to have that self-realization. When if I was coming into a business and I was going to come in as a partner, I'd want to be treated that way as well. Mm. So, and look, it was the best thing I ever did because, you know, like from where we are now, it 100% was the right decision. So anyway, we did this food accelerator, our food program. We had Origin tipping around in the background. Ross started growing the sales a good bit for us. And, you know, we started developing more flavors and all that. And when we got to the end of the program, we did lots of consumer research with Bord Bia, focus groups, this, that, and the other. And by the time we got to the end of the focus group, more or less the data that came back in the report was, they like the concept of your bars, they like to taste them, but they stick to your teeth and, you know, the product needs a bit of work. And while we're at it, the brand doesn't really connect with people and so on. So I was like, okay, so after this program, I decided that my product was no good and the brand was no good. But now I've got a co-founder, so we can figure it out together.
Okay.
So we made some technical changes to the brand, to the product. So we changed up the protein we're using. We actually work quite closely with the Kerry Group. Around that time, we were going through a couple of different business networking groups. Met, who just happened to be, he's retired now, but was the global finance director of the Kerry Group. He's a local guy here. And he's now a non-executive director on our board. And he's opened up a couple of doors in terms of helping us develop the product. So we worked with the Kerry Group to develop a very unique protein for us as like this new technology that helps texture and all this other stuff. And like that, our bar was just like, you know, they wanted to change the product almost completely. We just kind of took the nugget of what they had with that ingredient and kept it with our own brand philosophy and so on. And, you know, there, the bar had that little fix. The texture was just much better. The product form much better, and the flavor was much better. And we had an Irish grass-fed milk protein. Before that, we were using, you know, a whey protein. It was all we could get because the minimum order quantities we were able to buy at the time was so low. I think it was made in Lithuania or something. But now we had this amazing Irish grass-fed milk protein that just happens to be produced locally, you know, literally amazing. 20 minutes down the road from the factory. So when we look out the window of the factory, see all the cows grazing on the fields, that's the milk that's going into our bars. So it's
they're your staff, effectively.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
We just happen to have a global ingredient supplier on our doorstep, which was very useful for that story.
You mentioned something very interesting there. You happen to meet the global finance director. How do you network properly? Because networking is kind of a loaded term. People use it as kind of a high level of procrastination, I think, at times. Oh, I'm off networking. Doesn't really go anywhere. How do you network effectively? Because clearly you are good at it. You found a co-founder, you found a non-exec director and a new supplier. How do you do that correctly?
I don't know exactly, right? Because, right, myself and Ross, I'm more the extrovert, right? I'm highly extroverted on all the tests I've done, almost like too extroverted. But I'm actually quite shy and to talk to people until I get to know them a bit. Ross is kind of a bit more introverted, and he seems to be for example, Ross was at a networking event. He met our non-executive director and, you know, opened the relationship and, you know, from there. I'll give you an example of Ross again. I was talking to him one day, and he was like, oh, I was out surfing this morning, and there's a guy in the water. I didn't see him, and he took his head off the surfboard, and I apologised. Turns out he owns a chain of spa stores, and we're now listed in the mall. It's like, only you can nearly kill someone and get a listing off the back of it. So networking, I don't know. I think you need to be vulnerable. You need to tell, like, exactly where you are and what you're doing, you know, because I think when people are experienced and they've been there and done that, and they see, look, you're credible, you're really trying, but they're more likely to help you. But if you're going saying, oh, I'm brilliant at this, that, and the other, you know, they're less likely to help you out, thinking, look at this person, thinks they have it all nailed, and, you know, they've barely got, you know, any bump on their balance sheet yet, you know. So
I think that's a perfect point, and you've been authentic, been genuine. And it kind of sums up by what you wrote on LinkedIn about your first year. It really caught my eye. You spelled out exactly how the first year went, and you were completely open, completely transparent, and completely honest. There was no kind of, like, I think as a younger company, the tendency is to appear bigger or to appear imperfect or to appear like you've got it all figured out. But what you're saying there is by being kind of vulnerable and open and authentic and kind of admitting what you don't know is actually a help.
It really is. I learned that in the student union. It was one of the first bits of advice I got, is like, you're coming into a role where you actually know nothing, you've no experience, and you're expected to know everything. Use your inexperience to your advantage and say, I don't know. You know, people will be more likely to say, look, if you say to someone, look, I really need your help with this, or you've done this before, people are very, very open to help you out. But if you come in being like, oh, we've got it all figured out, people, all right, good luck, fair play to you.
And people can sense that, especially in Ireland. They can sense the bullshit-o-meter instantly.
And there is plenty of those guys around as well.
Oh yeah, there's no shortage, especially with Instagram now. There's definitely a lot of Instagram entrepreneurs knocking about.
Yeah, no, 100%. And we've probably fallen hook, line, sinker for a couple of these guys before in the past, selling services and promising the world and just absolutely falling through. So we've probably got a healthy level of skepticism now when we deal with anybody.
Bring me back to the point whereby you have the new ingredient supplier. So you're at the stage whereby Origin, the branding needs a bit of work, the ingredients need a bit of work, but you'd figured that out. What was the next step?
So the next step was, at the end of Foodworks, so you go and pitch to a couple of investors, seasoned investors, really good guys, and get some feedback. And the feedback was, look, we are interested to invest, but we gave them the feedback, look, we're going to try and rebrand. And the whole idea, what we came back with, the idea of how do we different from everyone else? It's a couple of things: authenticity, transparency, and sustainability. It was like, how are we going to get these things encapsulated in? And it was all down to this idea of realness, real food, you know. And that's our tagline now: real food, real people, real impact. And why do we say real people? like the sports nutrition industry is so filled with photographs of models that have been dieting for 6 weeks that are all photoshopped just to get like this perfect photo of their abs to sell their new pre-workout drink or whatever it is. And it's just this whole level of fakeness. So we're thinking fake ingredients, fake marketing. We need to come through with an authentic brand where you can actually live and breathe the founders. You can know us. You can know that what we're doing is making real products, real food. And, you know, myself and Ross, like, want to do something beyond just creating a business. I mean, that is nice, you know, building up something that's financially stable and all that kind of thing. But, you know, we both feel like we wanted to do something positive on top of that. So we're trying to figure out for a while, how do you blend all this together? And this was just part of, you know, it took months. It wasn't just that, you know, it was, oh, look, we can do this and we can do that. And actually, we had the brand developed before we had the full sustainability side fully nailed down. And I'll talk to you how we did the brand. So we had a look at some brands that we absolutely loved and then tried to see who designed the brand for them.
Okay.
And there was one design agency we saw in London that were just so good for insurgent brands. They developed brands like Pip and Nut, Nut Butter. They'd worked with BrewDog and a couple of other people. And we said, right, we really want to work with these guys. So we get them a call and we're like, look, we're new. We've got this brand. We think it's going to be pretty big. We'd love to work with you, but we probably can't afford you.
That was going to be my question. I was like, this sounds expensive.
Oh, Gary, I'm telling you now, this was like that their cost was more than our annual sales at that time just to get the branding done. So we talked to them and they said, they're kind of interested, kind of not. They've done it once before where they did the full brand design for a small chunk of equity with a company. Mm. And we were like, oh, would you do it again? And they're just like, no, we wouldn't. Right. And then myself and Ross hopped on a plane and we went over and we're like, look, if we call to you in person, will you have a meeting with us? And I said, sure, look, we will. And we'll see.
That's so brilliant. It's where you were knocking down the road to them in Tralee, like.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, look, Farron 4 flies direct to London. It's actually quicker to get to London than it is to get to Dublin from driving. So yeah.
Fire up the private jet. Nice. Yeah.
So we flew over, gave them the pitch and we gave them the pitch and they're like, we love what you're doing, guys. We're in. 100%. We're in. So we figured out kind of a rough valuation of what we thought our company was worth, how much their work was worth, and put together a percentage on it. And said, look, it'll be part of a funding round. So they were in. They started the design work. That was towards the end of 2018, 2019. So we were working with their team. I mean, their top studio, they're based in Shoreditch in London. They've about 30 people working there. And I assure you, they're definitely worth every single penny that's our value that we've given them so far. So they developed the brand for us. We were on conference calls. We called over to them face to face a number of times. So we got the brand right. Then around that time, kind of the brand right. Around that time, COVID was starting COVID was starting to kick in. We kind of had the brand right. We had the product now kind of developed. And, you know, one thing we kind of decided was we didn't want to use plastic packaging if possible. Ross is big into surfing. You know, he's always wearing sustainable gear, you know, supporting, you know, ocean plastic charities and so on. So we said, look, the food industry and the FMCG category are so responsible for single-use plastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're pumping tons of stuff out there and there is better ways. And we didn't want to kind of feed into that problem. So it did take quite a lot of time to find packaging suppliers. I mean, we were looking at suppliers. There's only two or three around that were any good. And it takes a long time to get these things set up because all the materials have to be made specifically and you have to get a machine that will run them and all this kind of stuff. So eventually we got our machine in place that would, you know, run certain types of packaging. So we did loads of trials and eventually got a spec of film that would work for us. And we said, look, we're trying to do something with the brand to support something. So why don't we double down? We now have got plastic-free, home compostable packaging in our bars, and the only bar, the sports nutrition bar, that's doing that. It's like, why don't we partner with some type of social enterprise or charity that's working in ocean plastic? So then we found a company called Plastic Bank, and they're absolutely amazing. They're all ex-Unilever, ex-Procter & Gamble guys who have a real social conscience, who set up Plastic Bank. And essentially what they do is they've created recycling centres in some of the really badly affected areas like Haiti, Cambodia, Indonesia. And a lot of the local fishermen have lost their jobs because the plastic pollution is so bad. So they've retrained them to go out to collect plastic, bring it in.
Amazing.
They now have recycling centres. The plastic is recycled and then they sell it back to the likes of Procter & Gamble and those people called social plastic, and it gets re-entered into to the chain.
Brilliant.
So it's preventing plastic from the ocean by pulling it in. It's creating sustainable economies in areas that have been hit really bad by this issue, and it's solving a problem, and it's win-win-win.
Brilliant. So what's your packaging made from now?
Our packaging is made from wood pulp and cellulose.
Okay.
And has a slight metal layer as well. So it's certified plastic free. So we've gone and got a third-party accreditation with a company that specializes in that. And you see that in the front of all our packs, that they're plastic free. It's also certified home compostable. So, you know, when you're like peeling your apples and oranges and putting all that stuff in your home compost bin, you can put in your All Real Nutrition protein bar wrapper in there, and that's fully
amazing.
Biodegradable. A lot of stuff's compostable, not a lot of stuff is home compostable, and there is a difference.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, just industrial compostable and home compostable is the difference.
And why do you think a lot of FMCGs aren't doing that? Cost?
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons. So like, we were at a stage where we were thinking, are we going to actually produce the bars ourselves? Are we outsourcing? We talked to a lot of outsourced partners and they couldn't do the packaging for us because they've invested 10 million euro lines. They're like, okay, not heat sealed, they're all glued and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, their lines won't take it. I'm like, well, you can't, that's a key part of our business. So, and they couldn't make the bar as good as it. So we decided to continue making it ourselves. And I'm like, well, look, it's got an advantage. A lot of the key guys can't deliver on the packaging promise that we can. So at least that's a key piece of uniqueness. Now, it was an absolute headache to set up a factory and try and scale. Manufacturing anything is near impossible. And doing manufacturing stuff and trying to scale that, you know, from having, my background is manufacturing engineering. But basically that just gave me an ability to it's like being able to read a sign in French, but you couldn't actually write it or understand it properly. But we didn't really have a background in manufacturing. So that was quite tough. And there is a lot of costs early on that you have to foot up, you know, for machines to get your place kitted out, put in a proper food safety management system, to hire the staff, to also manage the staff and make sure they're looked after and they're happy, and putting in all the right, you know, enterprise resource planning software. Well, it's an absolute headache. But would I do it again? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because we now have a unique product that we make in our specific way that tastes and looks and feels different than anything on the market. And I think if we had gone down the route of making a bar in the same factory that's making everyone else's, it's like putting a round peg in a square hole. They're forcing them all to fit on the same lines and the same packaging and the same stuff. So
I think there's something beautiful about making your own as well. I think there's something very special about that, about brands do that, especially making them here in Ireland. I think the last couple of years have shown people, you know, how fragile everything is, you know, how fragile the supply market is. You know, you go in and you see empty shelves and you're like, oh, never realized that came from wherever, Vietnam. And you're kind of going, there's something beautiful about stuff being made in Ireland and local ingredients and local produce. There's something very special about that.
Yeah. And the way we looked at it is now we're instead of employing people in Croatia or in Holland to make the bars, that are probably working for €5 an hour, whatever the minimum wage in those countries are. We're now creating employment in Ireland, and we actually have a policy to pay the living wage to all our production staff from when they start. Our accountants advised us against it, but we just felt it's the right thing to do. You know, we're here, this isn't a flash in the pan. We're trying to create a business that has a bit of longevity to it and that we can grow the brand. And, you know, we want our staff to be with us on that journey and to, you know, feel like they're being looked after and not just getting paid minimum wage and, you know, not being listened to, you know, because, you know, a lot of manufacturing businesses are just pay them as cheap as possible, get them in, get them out, you know, turn them over quick. You know, it's not our style. We want to create kind of a lasting relationship within the company and have that kind of culture within us that, look, we care about our staff. We care about, like, sustainability goes long beyond just creating products that are better for the planet. It's about creating sustainable communities and making everything work for everybody, not just, you know, the plastic crisis or the, you know, whatever treads your jumpers are made of. That's an important part to it, but it's also got to come back to locally as well. What can be sustainable for the long run?
You can see a lot of trend jumping at the minute. A lot of brands are trend jumping and greenwashing and just hopping on and kind of stamping it with, you know, recyclable or whatever, when realistically a lot of stuff you explained there I actually didn't know before. But now when you kind of think about it logically, it makes sense that companies can't respond that quickly, but suddenly they're just all sustainable. So you kind of have to think about, I suppose, where you're buying and who you're buying from and what their processes are.
Yeah. Like, again, if you see it every day on LinkedIn, and you're like, oh, that's literally a box ticking exercise.
Yeah.
You know, I really hope we don't come across like that, that we're just doing it for the sake of doing it. We just feel like it's the better way to do business. And it was in the core of who we are. But even outside of business, it's that we'd support sustainable charities. Like, all our clothes, like, I know I made a cheesy plug at the start about the jumper, but all our stuff is sustainably sourced cotton. You know, we just try to make sure that that authenticity rings the whole way through, because it's what we believe in personally as well as with the company. And you know, we think it rings true to our customer base as well.
Bring me back to the rebrand, because I think that's really interesting. So the company in London did the rebrand for you. What was that process like, rebranding from Origin to Allreal?
So we were trying to create from, which was a very product focused brand, which is just natural protein bar, that was it. You know, now we're trying to create a brand that's focused on creating a community of people, creating a performance nutrition brand for what we call everyday athletes. So, I mean, that's not your, like, your peak athletes. These are people who are doing 2 to 3 yoga classes a week, doing a CrossFit class. This is where we see the majority of the market. And these kind of hyper formalized sports nutrition products that have products or have ingredients you need a sports degree to understand. And albeit, I mean, they're safe to consume and all that, but people don't really get it. And we're trying to create something that doesn't have health warnings in the back that, you know, contains, you know, or causes laxative effects. We wanted to create natural products with simple ingredients that offered really good benefits, but also you could consume it every day, and try to create a very kind of simple brand that was kind of real. And that's where the whole kind of idea of realness came. So again, we had many, many interviews with our team on how we wanted the brand to look and feel and all that. And when they came back with, they came back, like what most brand agencies do, they come back with 3 different styles of brand and a couple of different names and so on. But this, like, this is our, the first one they showed us was Allreal, and they nailed it from the jump. It was really, really good. You know, one thing we were very keen on is having very distinctive ownable assets, or, you know, in the consumer's mind. So you'll see a stripe across all the Allreal products. And that's something that we kind of want to really own on the shelf, that people know once they see the stripe and they see, like, a white box with a colored stripe, that that's Allreal. So we did a lot of focus on what all the competitors look like on shelf. Lots of black, bright colors. Mm. How can we cut through that with white and the stripe? And when you put it on shelf, and it went through this kind of software that showed what we look like with whatever design that we picked on the shelf, and it really stuck out. And I still think if you look at a shelf with all the products, you'll see Allreal will kind of pop out a little bit, because we have that bright and white. And
it's very distinctive. I can't remember where I was 2 days ago, but walked in and you were actually towards the chocolate aisle, and I was like, wow, there's, like, it literally did look like a line down through the middle of the down through the stand. It was superb. It really does catch the eye.
So look, they know what they're doing, and they did a really, really good job. And we're so happy with it. And, you know, it's like the little tweaks here and there, but everything from, like, how the ingredients show in the front of our packaging. I mean, they got the photo, we've got photography people and food stylists and everything to do it exactly kind of how it should look. So we wanted to echo the food cues of kind of natural ingredients, but show kind of a design led kind of modern looking brand. And kind of normally you think of natural and you're thinking of the earthy browns and greens and so on, but I think they've kind of really nailed us with, you know, we're modern, we still have that bright appeal, but you know, we do look a little bit different on the shelf. So yeah, I mean, that was a process that took months, and then by the time we got the packaging right and got all the key lines set up and all set up for our machines and had everything working right so that All Real wasn't too high when it went through on the wrapper and, you know, all this kind of stuff. You know, that was quite a process, and Origin was tipping away in the background, but also kind of phasing out. And then COVID hit and our distributors went out of business, and we lost pretty much 90% of our sales. And that was, I think, in July of 19. And we were just kind of doing our funding round, and we basically had pretty much no sales from then until we launched All Real. So we had about a 5-6 month stage before we launched All Real that we just kind of had to grit our teeth and try and tell people, look, we'll you know, we paid everyone that we could. And you know, there's some kind of bits outstanding. I said, look, we'll be back in business soon, we're raising some money, just hold out on us, and look, we promise we'll keep business with you and all this kind of stuff. And most people are very understanding once you're very honest and open with them. And we got the All Real packaging printed, we got everything kind of ready and set up, but we had no distributor, we didn't really have anything. We literally had to start from scratch, new brand. And we said, look, put that behind us. What happened in the past happened in the past. It's not going to help us in the future. So we launched All Real. And at this time, we still had one staff in production, and myself and Ross. And we launched All Real. Our website, we were kind of working on our website and getting all our photographs and all that stuff done in September of last year. The website launched 28th of October, I think, around that date. And then we were live, and we were only selling online until the end of December. So very, very minimal sales. But we were still selling it. All Real, people were buying it and saying they loved it and all this, and it was so exciting. And then we started getting it into the shelves of shops around Kerry from January. We had talked to BWG. They liked it and said, look, we want to support you. It took quite a while to get that set up. But yeah, we had a central listing with them, and we went live with them around the end of April, May. By now, we had hired two more people in production, one more person in marketing. And right, we were going live the end of April. We've got three people in production, literally myself and Ross and Beck, who works in marketing. We're downstairs packing bars, getting everything ready, and we just produced as much as we physically could.
Okay.
Then we were like, right, shut down the factory, all our production operatives, train the sales reps, all our marketing team train the sales reps. We all just split and went all over the country.
I think it's really important to highlight that, because that really stood out to me in your LinkedIn post, was that you shut the whole factory and everyone who was working on the line was now a salesperson out in the real world.
I mean, they're passionate about the product as we are, because they see the quality of ingredients, the amount of effort it goes and how different it is. And it's like, we were looking at outsourcing the sales team. It was so expensive. And to be honest, they wouldn't give a rat's.
No,
look, they've got 40 other products. Great. Like, you know, great. They can get visibility and all that kind of stuff. But we're like, right, for this launch, we're just going to get everyone out. So
that's a bold move, Donal. That's a big move. Like, that's, I loved it. Like, when I read that, I was like, that's ballsy. That's really ballsy. Yeah.
But look, it allowed myself, Ross, and four other people to get on the road. So we had like six people selling All Real all over Ireland. And
how do you even approach something like that? How do you physically set out to do that? Like, do you just look at the map and go, right, we're going to hit here, here, and here? How does that even work?
Well, first of all, you treat treat it like you're going to one shop. One shop, you go in to meet the manager, you show them your sales sheet, whatever. You do that, but you just repeat it 600 times. just like that. But basically what we'd done was, in fairness, one of our guys in production is very good. We got a list of all the spars and mace stores and so on, and he put them all in the Google map for us, and we kind of ranked them in terms of ones near different areas. So we had gold, silver, and bronze. We did this all ourselves in our own Google map sheet that Chad in production had made up for us. And so we kind of split up. It's like, look, Ross, you're going to Cork. Niall, you're going to Limerick. Niamh, you're going this area. Chad, you're going to Galway. You know, you're going to Dublin. You're going here, you're going there.
That's a grind. That's a tough, like sales is tough.
Oh, look, it is. And, but you'd be surprised. I still think our team of unexperienced salespeople would have outperformed anyone that we paid to do that job that were experienced, because we've worked with many distributors and many different, and I suppose just to be candid, look, nothing has ever paid off for us as much as when we do it ourselves. So we've continued that approach now. We now hire all our own salespeople. Most, you know, you give your company to a distributor, they have a team of sales reps to go out and sell your product for you. You're waiting to hear back and so on. But it hasn't worked for us in the past. And we said, look, if it hasn't worked in the past, why is it going to work for us now? Yeah. And we saw, right, like Chad, he doesn't have a car. We sent him on a train up to Galway and he got on one of the city bikes and was cycling around the place. And he got 5 or 6 new stores in a day. And we were all on Slack updating, going, oh, new store, 3 nice. Cases here, whatever. And it just created this momentum. So then we hired the first sales rep. Now we're hiring our 6th sales rep. All the guys are back in production. Yeah, so that's just on our sales team. All the guys are back in production. We have 5 in production now. We have 6 on the road. Myself and Ross, and we've 1 more marketing. We're hiring 2 more now next year. So we're definitely going for growth. But what we're seeing is having our own sales guys, they're going in selling nothing else but All Real. Okay. And it's a lot more costly up front because it takes a bit of time. You know, you have to get vans and finance vans and get them all printed up and get the sales team, you know, have them live and breathe the brand. So when they go in and talk to the manager, they know exactly what they're selling. But we've just found that's what's worked for us and it's what's delivered for us. The other model hasn't delivered for us as much so far. So it has worked for other brands, just hasn't worked for us. I don't know why. But I hear from a lot of kind of upcoming food brands, not many happy things to say about their distributors behind closed doors.
Food seems like a tough business. Any entrepreneurs I've had on the pod who are in the food game, to a person, it seems like a tough business.
We're on the shelf next to Mars and Nestle and all the big €1 billion companies. They're not going to take it lightly when they see these new kind of upshoots coming in with this new product. And like they've got resources there. Like the amount of, it's like a silent war field going into stores. I remember one day, back when I was the one man band, that's what really opened my eyes to it. I got these cardboard stands made up and they cost me £30 a pop. That's the cost now, but they probably cost me double that at the time because I was only getting a couple made up. And I was walking into the back of the store, my box of Origin bars, and next thing I saw a guy with the Origin stand over his shoulder walking out the back door. And I was like, sorry. It's like, that's our stand. What are you doing with it? It's like, sorry, I just carried it out. The guy in the store told me to bring it out to the back. So I was like, I can leave it there. Yeah, thanks. And I went out to the guy in the store and it's like, hey, Joe, you sign in the products in the back door. And it's like, or did you tell him to bring out the stand? He's like, no, he's one of the other reps.
Turns out
he's a rep from a rival company and he was about to throw it into the cardboard compactor out the back.
Ruthless.
Yeah. But like if your bar is selling and your box is gone and another rep is in and they see a bit of space, they'll just lob something in there and take your spot. So you have to be constantly on top of it. It is a tough, tough game because you're essentially an upstart starting against people who have all the experience, have all the systems in place to make sure that they own their space on shelf. And that's something we were kind of very strong with at the start, is how do we own our space? How do we make sure we keep a good location in store? How do we make sure we've all the point of sale materials so when someone's walking by, they really see us? And that is quite hard. And like a lot of it comes down to personal relationships and really getting on with the store manager and them believing in you and getting them to be part of the journey as well. You know, you're supporting us, you know, this is where this is all starting. And, you know, when you get to that point with them and you have a good relationship with them, they do want to help you out. But equally, if your product's rubbish, they're not going to help you out. The product has to be delivered as well.
What do you think drove the growth of the last year? Because that's huge growth. How many places are you in now? We talked about a little bit off air.
So when we started January 1st, we were in 0 stores. Mm. Now we're I can't tell you for certain because right now I'll check Slack and there'll be new listings all the time because the sales team are constantly getting new stuff. We're somewhere between, right, I'd say 700 to 900 stores at the moment. I'd have to double check, but we're in around that region.
So just so people are aware of the timeline, when you say January, you mean January what year?
This year.
Yeah.
Zero stores, just selling online, calling around to local stores around Kerry in our really beat up cars, trying to get the product in onto the shelves. And bear in mind, only up until this year, we haven't paid ourselves anything. Now we're taking an incredibly low, modest wage, but we're now actually able to
pay. I thought you were going to say we're taking incredible wages. I was like, I'm coming to work for you guys. This is incredible.
Not yet. Well, myself and Ross are probably one of the two lower paid guys in the whole company at the moment.
That's always the way. It's always the way, though. What? Yeah. So zero to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of stores in 11 months.
Yeah.
What's the secret?
Right. I'd say probably you have to start off with a great product, right? That you just can't do it if the product's not good and not going to deliver. There is no secret. You just have to get out there. You get one store, and when you get one store, you go, great, we get five. And then, you know, someone who've given us a bit of help and encouragement and I suppose a bit of mentorship, you know, on the phone a couple of times is Gary Lavin from Vitit. And he was like, guys.
It's weird. As you were saying that, I was thinking back to his journey. He was on the pod a year and a half ago, maybe. And that was his story was going through my head as you were talking about it. That's bizarre.
Because when we were dealing with Origin, we were in maybe 200 stores. And he was like, guys, get off your arse and don't come back and talk to me till you're in 1,000 stores. Okay. So we're now in about 900. We get another 100 stores. I'm going to give Gary a call.
Give him a call in January. Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. He's a great business. He's a great story.
Absolutely. Yeah. So look up to him for what he's done. Because, you know, it was floating there. He'll say himself, he almost let it go to the wall. He kind of copped on and just got in a van and just started hitting stores, getting 10 new stores, 12 new stores a day was his record, and something we were trying to beat here internally. And I won't give you the results of that.
The Lavin scale. I love it.
Yeah. Well, we're thereabouts. But yeah, it's stories like that of Irish entrepreneurs who've paved the way, doing the same thing as us, maybe not a competitor product. That's given us so much inspiration and knowing, right, it's hard for everyone. This isn't easy. If it was easy, there'd be so many more people trying to scale and grow and do all this kind of stuff. So, you know, listen to podcasts like yours and hearing stories of other Irish entrepreneurs. I mean, it's absolutely invaluable to us upstarts, us up-and-comers who are trying to be the next Vitit or be the next whatever.
But it's brilliant when you have people like yourself on and people like Gary on who just break it down. Just say this is what it takes. Because there's often a kind of a mystique built up around businesses, and sometimes they do it themselves and sometimes it's voiced upon them. But having guys like yourselves come on and go, look, it's just this. It's graft, it's good products, hard work, consistency. That's what it is.
And one thing I will say is often when things go south, you kind of go, off, that's it, we're done. How are we gonna? What I often see with people when things go wrong, like when things go really good, nothing changes. They just go, okay, things are going good. How do we make it better? Things have gone bad. How do we make it better? It's the same mindset. It's not panic, panic, panic. What do we do? Call, you know, how do we fix it? Who do we need to call? What do we need to do to put in place? And then off you go. So it's something we see with likes of Gary and other guys. Just at the end of the day, what is the end goal? For us right now, it's what Ross slags me. I always say, we're in land grab mode. We're trying to get into as many stores as possible. Just keep getting more and more stores, more and more listings, and getting that kind of, what would you say, brand awareness as well as everything. You know, you'd be surprised. We're in that many stores and we live and breathe All Real all day. But we were at a local triathlon event a month ago, and not one of them had heard us. They're all local triathletes from Kerry. Mm. I mean, we're on radios here the whole time or in all the stores, and they hadn't even heard of us. So that just kind of opened my eyes. What job we need to do for brand awareness to really kind of get the brand in there. So there's so much more work to be done here in Ireland. But we're definitely up for getting it done.
Well, you've stolen my last question. What is the plan for next year? Because you've had a rocket ship of this year. So what's the plan for the next 12 months?
Well, we're planning to grow on the same trajectory. So right now we're growing. So PWG's Spar Mace Landis XL, we're growing our number of listings in those stores. We started off with Tesco's. We got one store to start off with, then five, now 77, and then next year we'll be in all of them. Musgrave, Supervalue, and Centra have given us a list now. So we've got sales reps all over Ireland. They're going to start building up our store numbers. And yeah, that's the focus, is keep building up the retail in Ireland. Our direct-to-consumer business is basically our website. That's doing quite well at the moment. We're just off our biggest month yet. Black Friday.
Brilliant.
We're 150% our best month ever this
Incredible.
Month.
Brilliant.
So yeah, really good. Yeah, we hit a goal I didn't think we'd hit till next year in terms of revenue and order numbers. So we're looking at growing that a bit more, and we're looking at growing into a new market as well in America, is where we're kind of focused. So we're starting to sell on Amazon in the US. We've started selling a bit on Amazon in the UK, and that was our plan, just to see how it goes, manage the, you know, send over a couple of pallets, see how it goes, and go from there. So actually, funny story, we were on a development program with Board Bia. It's like an accelerator program for the American market. And we just got in because, look, we're going to go over to America. Like, our plan is just to get onto Amazon next year, get a bit of data. Then the following year, with some data built up, then we can start looking to go into retail and, you know, building up in a couple of local markets and this kind of thing. So we jumped in this program to understand more about the market in the States. And let me tell you, it is. You think Ireland is complicated. America is nuts. It's nuts. You just probably chain about five people before you can get your product on the shelf, between brokers, distributors, importers, all this kind of stuff. But anyway, we did the program. We got through stage one, which is fine with our program. Then stage two, I think there was 10 brands brought through. And then you get to kind of pitch to some retailers to get some feedback about your new proposition for the American market. And we're getting with some top Irish brands, you know, we didn't think we had a shot really. And we gave the pitch, not thinking much is going to come of it. So I wasn't that nervous. And then we got the feedback. We ended up winning the pitch, which was the US Retailer's Choice Award on this development program. And then off the back of that, one of the buyers who was there judging us was like, he owns a big chain of stores in the States, about 400 stores. In the natural health food space. I was like, guys, absolutely love what you're doing. Love Irish grass-fed dairy. Love your story. I want to list you. If you give me 6 months exclusivity, will you come on board? And we were like, well, we're sending stuff to America anyway, so yeah, we will. So it was one of those things, just say yeah, and figure it out afterwards.
Yeah.
So that was about 4 or 5 months ago. We're planning to launch in March of next year, and we've been doing some serious networking. Board Bia have been amazing. We're working with a consultant to kind of get our go-to-market plan. You know, we've got our sales team getting set up over there now and figuring out all our supply chain and all this other stuff. And then all our kind of marketing and all the people, you know, from importers to brokers to distributors to all the paperwork. Everyone's looking for a cent in America. You know, if they pick up the phone, there's a dollar charge here and there. So we're just getting the full value chain ready. But yeah, we're ready to launch across there. And funny enough, that's our first full national listing in any retailers in the States.
Not a bad one to start with.
No, not a bad one to start with. So yeah, we're going to manage that quite closely, and we're going to really double down on that. And the plan is, you know, these guys have 400 stores. We're going to over promise and over invest in them to leverage on the next one. That's what we did with Ireland, right? In BWG, we got in, we put stands in every store, we put out a huge amount of online marketing. You know, we really went more than, you know, more trade spend percentage of, you know, your turnover than you're supposed to be spending, just because we wanted to show how good we did there to leverage to get more retailers. And that's what worked for us. I mean, we've got Tesco's, we've got Musgrave's, so on. So we're going to use a similar strategy in the States, overinvest in them, and hopefully the next big guys will come on. And we're partnering now with a very, very senior, experienced sales team who really like our brand, who are taking us on. And, you know, they're sharing our strategy. So Yeah, that's the goal for next year, and then probably raise a few pounds to get that go-to-market strategy in place. And yeah, that's pretty much the goal for next year, is get Ireland more set up, because we're nowhere near it yet. We probably thought we'd need another year or two before we'd start looking at export, but when opportunities are there, you just got to jump in them, I guess.
Fantastic. You touched on it a little bit there, but if people are listening, where can they get an All Real Bar today? Online, and but also where else?
Yeah, so you can get them online at eatallreal.com, but you can get them in... You've got a 50% chance to get them in your local Tesco. We're in quite a number of Spars, Mace, Londis stores.
Brilliant.
A good couple of Super Values, good couple of Centras, lots of independent coffee chains, independent health food stores. You know, there's a whole medley of places you'll find All Real.
Class. And the website is Eat All Real?
EatAllReal.com.
Perfect. Niall, thanks for chatting today.
Gary, thanks for having me on.
That was my chat with Niall Harty, the co-founder of All Real Nutrition. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed this series. Get in touch with me. Let me know what you think. And get in touch and let me know what company should be featured on next series for the Rising Star segment. Maybe two. Join my mailing list, MrGaryFox.com. I send out an email every week rounding up the best stuff that I've seen, done, or I'm playing around with. You'll get all access to all my experiments there. I'm also releasing the reading list of every book that's ever been featured on the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast, every book that's been recommended by guests. So go to MrGaryFox.com, sign up for the newsletter, and you'll get a free reading list. And that's it. I'll see you next Monday. Have a great week.